Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Yod Dalid. Today's daf has been dedicated by Ray Esses and his wife Monique in honor of the rabbi and the entire staff at DailyGemara.com, the School of Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilui Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We begin on Kuf Yud Gimal Amud Bet on the bottom line of the Amud. Amar Rav Acha Bar Abba Amar Rav Yohanan. Minayin Lishinui Begadim Min HaTorah. How do we know that there's a concept from the Torah to change garments, meaning that it's derech kavod, that it's respectable in front of God to wear important garments? How do we know such a concept from the Torah that the garments mean something? So the Gemara says, Shne'emar, ufashat et begadav velavash begadim acherim. Regarding the Kohen, the Torah tells us that he takes off one set of his garments, ve'lavash begadim acherim, and he puts on a different set. Now, what is this referring to? So that she says that at the time the Kohen used to clean out the ashes from the Mizbeach, which would not be considered, let's say, as an important service compared to bringing a korban or pouring the wine on the Mizbeach. So it says that he'd have to change his garments, which means they want him to wear less important garments at the time that he removes the ashes from the Mizbeach, in order that his important garments do not become dirty. So when he does the more important avodah, he'll have clean, respectable clothes. So you see from the fact that the Torah demands the Kohen to change his garments from different services, so you see that shinui begadin, that changing garments for kavod, is a Torah concept. V'tana deber Rabbi Yishmael, limitcha Torah derech eretz. Torah teaches us a code of derech eretz. Begadim shebishel bahem kedera l'rabo. The garments that the person wore when he was cooking the pot of food for his master, al yimzog bahem kos l'rabo. He shouldn't wear those same garments while he pours his master his cup of wine. Which means again, in this mashal, the cooking of the pot is compared to cleaning out the ashes from the Mizbeach. The clothes will get soiled, and therefore person does not wear the same clothes that he cooked with to serve with. So you see the same concept. Amar Rabbi Chaya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yohanan Genai hu l'talmid racham sheyetze b'minhalim hametullaim lashuk. It is a genai, it is a humiliation for a Talmid Chacham that he should go out in the marketplace with shoes that have patches on them. Meaning it's not proper for a Talmid Chacham, a scholar, to wear shoes that have patches. Gemara says, what do you mean? Ve'arabi acha bar hanina nafik. We have a story that of Acha bar Hanina indeed went out with patches on his shoes. Amar Rabbi Acha bered Rav Nachman betelae al gabe telae. That which we said that it's not proper for Talmid Chacham to go out with patches on his shoes, it means patches on patches. Which means they patch the shoe once and they put another patch on the patch. That already is a genai. That's not respectable. However, one patch is okay. And the Gemara continues. Ve'amar Rabbi Chaya bar Abba. And Rabbi Chaya bar Abba taught Amar Rabbi Yohanan Kol Talmid Chacham Shenimsar Revav Al Begadav Hayav Mita. Any scholar that there is a stain of, let's say, fat or oil on his garments, he is hayav mitah. He is punishable by the death penalty just for having a garment that has a stain on it. Shene'emar, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk. The pasuk is in Mishle, kol misanai ehabu mavet, which literally means all the enemies of God love death. The Gemara says, "Al tekrem misanai." Don't read it. The enemies of God, ela masniai, those that cause others to hate the religion. Chas v'shalom. That she says that when a Talmid Chacham acts in a disgusting manner, specifically when his garments are not clean, so the people come along and say, "Woe to those that study Torah, because they're unkempt and dirty," and therefore it causes people to hate Torah, and that causes a tremendous Chilul Hashem, and the only atonement for Chilul Hashem is death. And therefore the pasuk says, kol misanai, as we read it now, masniai, those that cause others to hate with the religion, ehabu mavet, they must love death, because that is their atonement. Ravina amar, Ravina comes along and says, revad itmar. He had a different text. Instead of the word revav, which means a stain of oil or fat, he had the word revad, which would be a stain of semen on his garment. So the Gemara says, Bela peligi. And really there's no argument between the two rabbis. Ha begilima, ha bilbusha. Gilima is the outer garment. On the outer garment, a revav, a stain of fat or oil, is considered a genai for a Talmid Chacham, is not proper, because the people will come along and see that the Chacham is not clean and it's dirty, and it'll have a bad reflection on the Torah. That's on the outer garment. However, if it's on the undergarment, meaning under his outer robe, so really it's not exposed so much, so therefore the people will not be bothered so much. However, even on the undergarment, under his robe, if there's a semen stain, that already will disgust the people, and that'll also cause them to hate Torah. So therefore, on the outer garment is a revav, is a stain of fat or oil. On the inner garment, even a stain of semen would be subject to this punishment. What does it mean, the pasuk in Yeshaya, where God tells the prophet that he should go, Kasher alach avdi Yeshaya, that Yeshaya was told by God, Arum v'yachef, that he had to go naked and yachef, without shoes, for 3 years. So the Gemara cannot assume that when it says in the pasuk Yeshaya was arum, naked for 3 years, that's impossible. So what does it mean when it says arum? So the Gemara says arum v'yachef, arum bebegadim biluim, meaning God told him to wear clothes that were worn out. That's what it means, arum, not arum totally naked, but he was wearing clothes that were worn out. V'yachef b'minalim amtulaim. And Yachev doesn't mean he walked without shoes at all, but he wore shoes that had patches on them, even though we just learned that a Talmid Chacham should not go out like that. However, in this case, God specifically commanded Yeshaya to dress like that, so therefore he had no choice. Tranatam, we learned in a Mishnah, Revav al Marda Chotzitz. Now we know in the laws of Mikveh, when one is dipping something in the mikveh, he must make sure that there is no, there's not something interposing on the item itself. Something that interposes on the item where the water would not be able to touch the entire garment, let's say, or vessel, that is called a hatzitza. Now, even the smallest hatzitza, if the person does not want that interposition there, can be a hatzitza, and therefore he has to make sure that the garment that he's dipping or the vessel that he's dipping is totally clean, that the water would be able to hit every area. So now the Gemara is discussing a marda. Marda literally means the saddle of an animal. You have to keep in mind, in the olden days, a saddle of an animal that was sat upon by a zav or a zava can become tameh. So the question is now, let's say you have a stain, a revav, a stain of, let's say, oil, or as we said, fat, on the marda, on the saddle. So Tana Kama says, chotzetz, that indeed is going to be an interposition, hatitza, and therefore one has to clean it first before they dip it in the mikveh. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, ad ki isad ha'italki. He says the minimum size to be considered a chatzitza, where people are makpid, where people, it distresses them if they have such a size on it, would be the shiur, which is isar italki, the size of the Italian isar. The isar is a coin, which the books bring down would be the size of, let's say, 3/4 of an inch square. So if it's less than that, then people are not even distressed by such a small stain. It's not even considered a chatzitza. Because regarding the laws of chatzitza, if it's on the minority of the vessel, meaning the stain does not cover the majority, it's on the minority of it, and the person is not distressed by it, that's called mi'ut she'eno makpid. That it's on the minority, and he's not distressed, he doesn't care, then it's not a chatzitza. However, once it reaches the size of an isara italki, this stain, even though it's on the minority of the garment, since he is distressed by such a stain, so it will be considered a chatzitza. That's regarding a mardat. Ve'ala begadim, but on regular clothes, mitzad ehad eno chotzetz. If the stain only shows through on one side of the garment, it's not a chatzitza. Mishnei tzedadim chotzetz. The Tana Kama says that if the stain goes through and through the garment, where you could see it on both sides, so then it's considered a chatzitza. So there's a difference. Regarding a mardarat, so we said a devav is chotzetz. We did not discuss regarding a mardarat if it's on one side or on two sides. But Tana Kama says, by a garment, specifically, the stain has to go through both sides. Rabbi Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, af mitzad echad chotzetz, that by garments, even one side, if the stain shows through, it is indeed a chatzitza. So comes the Gemara and says, ba'amine Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, me Rabbi Harina. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish asked the question to Rabbi Hanina, Mardarat mitzad echad o mishnestadim, which means, when you said that the mardarat is a chatzitza, is it from one side or is it from both sides? Which means, according to Rabbi Yishmael of that braita that said, a beged is a chatzitza on one side, what about a mardat? Which means, according to Tana Kama, it's clear that if by garments it's only a stain that is so much that it reaches both sides of the garment, that's a chatzitza. So for sure, a mardat is not going to be better than begadim. And therefore, according to Tana Kama, the mardat has to also be on both sides to be considered a stain. But according to the Bishmael, that says, by a garment, it's one side to be considered a chatzitza. What is his opinion by a mardat? So the Gemara asks, is it one side or two sides? Amar le, so the Shlakish answered him, Zu lo shamati. I really didn't hear the answer to such a question. But I heard something similar that will help us answer the question. Ditnan, because we have a Mishnah. Rabbi Yose Omer, Rabbi Yose taught, Shel Banaim, the garments of Banaim. The Gemara will tell us later that Banaim are actually Talmidei Chachamim. And the Talmidei Chachamim are called Banaim. We'll see why. Literally, Banaim means builders. So the Talmidei Chachamim that are called Banaim, they're very particular regarding their clothes, that they be meticulous. So it says, the Bi Yosef taught the clothes of Banaim mitzad ehad. that even if their clothes have a stain on one side, since they're meticulous and it distresses them, so therefore even on one side, if the stain shows through, it'll be considered a chatzitza. Veshel bur, but of an amaharis that is less particular, mishnet stadim, is going to be from both sides. Only both sides will be considered a chatzitza. Anything less, the amaharis is not, makpid does not distress him, and therefore would not be a chatzitza. So now the Gemara says, ve'lo tehe mardat hashuva mibeged shel amaharis, meaning the mardat, a saddle, should not be more important than the clothes of an amaharis. Meaning, if you're telling me that the clothes of an amaharis are only considered a chatzitza if the stain goes through on both sides, so a saddle should not be better than the clothes of amaharis, and therefore the Gemara wants to resolve our question that according to Rabbi Ishmael, only a stain that goes through both sides of the mardat will be considered a chatzitza. It should be pointed out that in the original Baraita, we had a statement to Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Ishmael that said by garments, all garments, the shi'ur is a stain even going through one side. In the second Mishnah that we quoted, we see that Biyoseh makes a difference between Tamidei Chachamim and Amei Haaretz. That, incidentally, is also going according to the opinion of Rabbi Ishmael. So we have a machloket, what Rabbi Ishmael holds. The first Braita holds all garments, no different. It's always a stain, even on one side. Whereas according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding of Rabbi Ishmael, it depends. Tell me the Chachamim, even on one side. Why? Because they're meticulous and it distresses them, even such a stain. However, Amaharis on both sides. But the Gemara's answering that if you see that by an Amaharis, that is stained only on two sides, so a mardat is not going to be worse than the case of the clothes of an amaharis, and therefore at least two sides to be considered a chatzitza. Comes the Gemara and continues, my banna'im, what are these banna'im that Rabbi Yosef mentioned? Amar Rabbi Yochanan taught, elu tamidei chachamim. Banaim are referring to Talmidei Chachamim she'oskim bebinyano shel olam kol yemehen, because they're involved in the building of the world all their lives. Since the Talmidei Chachamim study Torah, and we know that through the study of Torah, that keeps the world in existence. Like we said in the Tana de Beliau, al tikre banayich ela bonayich, that the Talmidei Chachamim are considered builders, so therefore they're referred to as banaim. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan taught some laws regarding a Talmid Chacham. Ezehu Talmid Chacham shemachzirim lo aveda b'tvi'ut ha'ayin. What is considered a Talmid Chacham that we're allowed to return to him his lost object, bitvi'ut ayin, which literally means with recognition? The law says that if somebody loses an object, in order for him to regain it, he must give signs. We call them simanim. He must tell the person that found it some signs in order to identify the lost object. However, when it comes to a Talmid Chacham, we can show him the item, and if he says that, yes, I recognize the item as being mine, we trust him and we give it to him. That's called Tevi'ut Ayin. So there's a certain leniency when it comes to Talmidei Chachamim, that we give them back their objects just if they recognize it. So the Gemara says, but what qualifies a Talmid Chacham to get such a dispensation? So the Gemara says, Zeh makpid al haluko lehofcho. If a person, of course, has knowledge, but he's makpid that he will not wear his garment if it was inadvertently put on inside out. She's very meticulous. Some people, if they wear their garment inside out, they don't care, so that's the way they put it on, so they walk out that way, even though the stitching is going to be shown on the outside. A person that's meticulous, that he puts on his garment, if it's on the other side, so he takes it off again and puts it on the right way, so therefore, this is considered a Talmid Chacham, to give back his object, bitbi'ut ayin. Ve'amar Rabbi Yochanan taught, Ezehu Tamid Hakam. Who is considered a Tamid Hakam? Shememanim Oto Panas Al Sibur, that's worthy to designate as a leader over the community. Ze Shesho'alin Oto Devar Halakha Bekol Makom Ve'omer, that you're able to ask him a question anywhere in the Talmud, and he's able to give an answer. Va'afilu b'masechet kala, and even in Masechet Kala. Masechet Kala is a small Masechet that not too many people learn. It starts off with the law that a bride is forbidden to her husband if they do not make the Sheva Berachot under the Chuppah. It talks about laws of marriage. In any event, not too many people learn Masechet Kala. So it says, if you want to be a leader of the community, you have to know the entire Talmud, including Masechet Kala, that if somebody would ask you a question on that small tractate, you're able to answer. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan further taught, Ezu tamid hacham shibnei oiro mitzuvim na'asot lo melachto, who is considered a tamid hacham? That his community is obligated to support him and do his work for him, which means there is a law that says that a Tamid Hakam, the community is obligated to support him and do the Tamid Hakam's work. How do we know that? Because she quotes us from Masechet Yoma, there's a contradiction in Pesukim. One Pesuk says that God tells Moshe, Ve'asita lecha aron etz, that God tells Moshe to make the ark of the Mishkan. Ve'asita is singular. Then we have another pasuk that says, Ve'asu Aron aseh shitim, that they, Klal Yisrael, made the Aron. Starts off by being the obligation of Moshe, Ve'asita. And then it says, Ve'asu. So we learn from here that the people did not allow Moshe to do the work because it would not be kavod. So therefore they did his work. So we see there's an obligation for the community to do the work of the Tamid Hakam, in order that he should be freed to study Torah. So the question is, what makes a Tamid Hakam worthy of such a privilege? So the Gemara says, Zeh shemaniya chefzo ve'oseg b'chatzeh shamayim, which means, this is somebody that does not involve himself with his personal needs, and the whole day he involves himself with the needs of Shamayim, which means God's needs. Someone is devoted to the needs of God and neglects his own needs, so that person is worthy of such a privilege. But again, the community is only obligated to toil to get the rabbi his bread, which means his basic necessities, but not the luxuries of life. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan further taught, Ezu Tamid Chacham, who is considered a Tamid Chacham? Kol Sheshoalin Oto Halakha Bekol Makom Ve'omra. Again, that you can ask him a question anywhere in the Talmud, and he's able to answer it. So the Gemara says, "Lemay nafkamina?" Well, what do I have to know this qualification for? The minuya panas ala sibur. Again, to appoint a man, a leader on the sibur. Ibehada masechta, if he only knows one masechet, meaning he learned the entire Talmud. However, he can only answer questions in the Gemara that he's learning in the present time. Then be'atre. Then you can only appoint him as a local leader of the community. Because yes, he does know the entire Talmud, but since he can only answer questions, and specifically the Gemara that he's learning in the present time, so he can be a local leader. However, if he can answer in the entire Talmud, he's fluent in the entire Shas, and he can answer questions even in the section that he's not learning, then Beresh Metifta, then you can appoint him to be the Rosh Yeshiva. So that is the first interpretation of the Gemara. When the Gemara said Banaim, Banaim is referring to Talmidei Hachamim. They are Bonei Olam. Now the Gemara is going to give an alternate interpretation what Banaim are. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Elu Kelim Ha'olairin. These are the special garments that are called Alolairin, Habaim Medina Tayam, that come from overseas. These were special, valuable garments like towels or robes that were made of fine garments that they used to use in the bathhouses, and the attendants of the bathhouses used to give them to their important customers. And therefore, they would call them Banaim, because a bathhouse in Aramaic is called Be'bane. So therefore, Banaim is the garments that were given to the important customers in the bathhouses. And therefore, what Rabbi Yosef was teaching us, that these garments, since they're very chashuv, even a stain on one side of the garment is going to be considered a hatzitsa. And the second part of the statement would mean, but the clothes of a ama'aris, meaning if a boor wears these special clothes, since he's not so meticulous, so even if the boor wears the kli or laydin, only if the stain is on both sides. But again, comes that we have a mahloket, what Banaim are. Is it the clothes of Talmidei Chachamim? Or is it referring to the specific type of garment that was worn in the bathhouse? Now the assumption is that these garments, the kli or laydin of the bathhouse, were white, and therefore the stain, even on one side, is very noticeable, and therefore will be considered a hatzitza. So the Gemara asks, Lememra dehevreninu? Are you meaning to tell me that these kli ulayrin, these bathhouse clothes, are you telling me that they were white? But we have a statement that Rabbi Yanai told his sons, Banai, my children, al tikbiruni, do not bury me, lo bekelim levanim, not in shrouds that are white, velo bekelim shehorim, nor in shrouds that are black. Levanim, don't bury me in white, sheme lo iskeh, because maybe I won't be zocheh to go to Gan Eden, and I'll be in the other place, in Geinam, veyeh kehatan ben avelim. And I'll be dressed in white, and everybody else will be dressed in black, so I'll be like a hatan, a groom, amongst mourners. Which means I'm going to be out of place. I'm not going to be dressed properly. In Geinam, they're wearing black. And therefore, I'm going to be dressed white. It'll be like a hatan amongst the mourners. Shehorim, and don't bury me in black. Sheme iskeh. Because maybe I will have the zechut to go to Gan Eden, and if I'm wearing black, ve'yeh ka'avel ben hatanim, I'm going to be like a mourner who wears black amongst the hatanim, the grooms that wear white. Ela bekelim ha'olayrin abayim mimidinat hayam. So bury me, he said, in kli olayrin that come from overseas, implying that kli olayrin are some type of colored garment and not white. So the Gemara says, al matzum keninu, must be they were red. She was not white, not black, they were red, somewhere in the middle. Gemara says, Lakashya, have a gilime, have a mushe. When it comes to the gilima, the outer garment, so the outer garment of kli olayrin, of that level of clothes, is colored. However, lebushe is the undergarment, and that's like the garments they would use in the bathhouses, so that is white. So there's different colors of kli olayrin. There's a difference between the outer garment and the undergarment. Comes the Gemara and says, we learned in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah taught us that we have a machloket between Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva regarding the law of bringing sacrifices of Yom Kippur on Shabbat or Shabbat to Yom Kippur. Let's review the opinions. Rabbi Yishmael said that the korbanot of Shabbat are able to be brought on Yom Kippur. For example, let's say Yom Kippur comes out on a Sunday, and they brought the korbanot of Shabbat, obviously on Shabbat, but there were more fats that needed to be burnt. So Motzei Shabbat, which is now Kippur, it is permissible according to the Bi Ishmael to bring those korbanot. So korbanot of Shabbat can be brought on Motzei Shabbat, which is Kippur. Or is it the Bi Akiva said, no, you're not allowed to bring the korbanot of Shabbat on Yom HaKippurim. Now the Gemara is going to show us the source of this argument. And the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Braita. Olat Shabbat beShabbato. This is referring to the Korban Olah that they would bring every Shabbat. Now this pasuk actually is extra, because in the previous pasukim, before this pasuk was written, the Torah clearly tells us that you have to bring a korban olah every single day, including Shabbat. So the Hakamim are now going to be doresh this pasuk, olat Shabbat b'Shabbato. And they're going to say the following. Limed al chelbe Shabbat shekerebim b'yom kippurim. From this pasuk we can learn that it is permissible to bring the korbanot of Shabbat on Yom Kippurim. Again, in that case, when Kippur falls out on a Sunday, you can bring the leftover korbanot of Shabbat, the fats that were not burnt, you can bring them on Motzei Shabbat Kippur. How are they learning that? It's because this pasuk is extra. So imagine if the pasuk would just say, Olat Shabbat B'Shabbat. As if the pasuk is telling us you could bring the ola of one Shabbat on a different Shabbat. Now obviously it doesn't mean that you could bring the korbanot of one Shabbat the next week, because by then the korban is notar, it's considered leftovers, and that the time already has expired to bring the korban. Must be talking about on a different type of Shabbat. Kippur is also called a Shabbat. So therefore the Torah is telling you, Olat Shabbat b'Shabbat. You can bring the Olah of one Shabbat on another Shabbat. Rabbi Ishmael understands that to mean the Olah of Shabbat can be brought on Kippur. So the Gemara says, Yachol af shel yom kippurim b'Shabbat. Could you do the opposite? If let's say Kippur fell out on a Friday and you didn't finish bringing the fats, can you bring them on Friday night on Shabbat? So Gemara says, Tamur lomar b'Shabbato. The fact that the Torah makes a exclusion by saying b'Shabbato only on its Shabbat. So therefore it's coming to limit that you cannot bring Kippur to Shabbat. So again, there's an inclusion and an exclusion. From the fact that it says, Olat Shabbat b'Shabbat, teaches you can bring from Shabbat to Kippur. But from the fact that it says b'Shabbato, the extra vav there shows us that only on its Shabbat, it's limiting to tell us that only from Shabbat to Kippur, but not Kippur to Shabbat. That would be the opinion of Rabbi Ishmael. Devrei Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Akiva omer, how does Rabbi Akiva learn? Olat Shabbat b'Shabbato. You know what the Torah is telling me? Limed al chelbe Shabbat shekerevim b'yom tov. His chidush is that the korbanot of Shabbat can be brought on a Yom Tov, for example. If let's say there's a Yom Tov on a Sunday, and you didn't finish bringing the korbanot of Shabbat, so Motzei Shabbat, you can bring the korbanot of Shabbat on Yom Tov, Olat Shabbat b'Shabbat, meaning you can bring the korbanot of Shabbat on a different Shabbat. Yom Tov is also called Shabbat. Yachol ap b'yom kippurim, even if that Yom Tov is Kippur, according to Rabbi Akiva, no, Tamud Lomar b'Shabbato, only on a specific Shabbat, but not all Shabbatot. So therefore, this is the source pasuk of both Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva. So now the Gemara wants to understand why each rabbi learned the way he learned. So the Gemara says, because we are going to say, according to Rabbi Ishmael, Nidarim v'nidavot kerevim b'yom tov, that there is a general machloket regarding the korbanot of Yom Tov. Rabbi Ishmael holds that it is permissible on Yom Tov to bring korbanot of nedarim, vows, and nedavot would be types of korbanot that one donated to the Beit HaMikdash. The chiddush of Rabbi Ishmael is, even though those korbanot can be brought either before Yom Tov or after Yom Tov, so you really don't have to necessarily bring it on Yom Tov, but he says it doesn't matter. These items can be brought on Yom Tov as well. So therefore, if I can bring totally voluntary korbanot on Yom Tov, according to Ishmael, I don't need a pasuk to tell me that I can bring the obligatory Shabbat korban on Yom Tov. Because if I can bring the nedarim and the nedavot, I don't need a pasuk to tell me that I can bring the Shabbat korban on Motzei Shabbat Yom Tov. So therefore the pasuk must be coming and telling me, Olat Shabbat b'Shabbat, referring to, I can even do it on Kippur. Whereas the Gemara says, however, V'chi etzarech kra l'yom kippurim, and therefore for Rabbi Ishmael we need the pasuk to tell me a bigger chiddush, that even Kippur will be permissible. V'devei Rabbi Akiva, but according to Rabbi Akiva, nedarim v'nedavot en kerevim b'yom tov. according to Rabbi Akiva, you cannot bring a korban neder or nedaba on Yom Tov, and therefore when the pasuk comes and tells me olat Shabbat b'Shabbato, v'chi etzarik kara l'mishriya b'Yom Tov. So the pasuk is actually coming and telling me that you can bring a korban of Shabbat on Yom Tov, because regular nedarim and nedavot are forbidden on Yom Tov. Bring them either before or after, according to Rabbi Akiva. Therefore, the pasuk must be coming and telling me that while it is forbidden to bring nedarim and nedavot on Yom Tov, it would be permissible to bring the korban of Shabbat on Yom Tov. So that is really the basis of why each rabbi learned the pasuk like he did. It stems from what they hold on Yom Tov. Where is Rabbi Yishmael holds that nedarim and nedavot can be brought on Yom Tov? So therefore, obviously, you can bring a korban of Shabbat on Yom Tov, because Shabbat is an obligatory korban. And therefore, the pasuk must be coming and telling you a different chidush, that the korban of Shabbat can be brought even on Yom Kippur. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, that says nedarim and nedavot are not brought on Yom Tov, so the chidush is, but a Shabbat korban can be brought on Yom Tov, but not Kippur. Comes Gemara Zama, Rabbi Zera, we go to the Amud Bet. Ki havina bevavel, he says, when I was in Bavel, Hava Amri, they told me, Ha de Tanya, that which we have in a Braita, Yom Kippurim Shahaliyot Erev Shabbat, Yom Kippur that fell out on a Friday. So the Gemara says, Lo hayu tuk'in, they would not blow the shofar. Now we know in the old days they had a custom, on regular Fridays, they would blow the shofar every Friday 6 times, in order to get the people to stop working, and to signal to them that Shabbat is beginning. However, when Yom Kippur fell out on a Friday, they would not blow the shofar. U'motzei Shabbat, when Yom Kippur would fall out on Saturday night, Lo ayu mavdilin, they would not make havdalah, meaning they would not say in the tefillah hamavdil bin kodesh lekodesh, which is normally on Yom Tov when it comes out on a Saturday night, we say mavdil bin kodesh lekodesh. However, when Kippur came out on a Motzei Shabbat, the Gemara says lo ayu mavdilin. So that was a braita. So he says, when I was in Bavel, Rabbi Zera says, they used to tell me that the opinion of this Braita is the Vrei HaKoli. Everybody agrees to this, which means this mahloket of, I'm sorry, this statement of that on Yom Kippur on a Friday there was no shofar, this is going according to all the opinions, meaning the opinions that we mentioned above, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Ishmael, regarding bringing the Shabbat Korbanot on Kippur, if that's permissible or not. This has nothing to do with this statement in the Braita. Everybody would agree, both Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva, that on Friday Kippur you don't blow the shofar in order to signal that Shabbat is coming. However, Rabbi Zera continues, Ki salik na le'atam, when I went to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechte li Yehuda bered Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, I found Yehuda bered Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, the Ativa Kamar, and he came along and said, Rabbi Akivahi. He said, no, the author of that Baraita is indeed Rabbi Akiva. He's the one that says that you don't blow shofar on Kippur that falls out on a Friday. Why? Because basically we have a rule like this. The rule is as follows. When do you blow the shofar? Only in a case where you're going from a lighter day to a more strict day. For example, on a regular Friday, you're permissible to do work, so they would blow the shofar on that Friday to signify that a higher level of Kedusha is coming, Shabbat. However, according to Rabbi Akiva, who holds that the Kedusha of Shabbat and Kippur are equal, how do we know that? Because he says, just like you can't bring the Korbanot of Kippur on Shabbat, you cannot bring the Korbanot of Shabbat on Kippur, as we learned in our Mishnah. So must be yours, they're equal. The rule is, when you go from an equal day to an equal day, they didn't blow the shofar. So therefore, in Israel, they taught that that Baraita that said you don't blow the shofar on Friday when it came out Kippur, must be the Rabbi Akiva that says the days are equal. The Rabbi Ishmael, but if it was the Rabbi Ishmael, Kivan de Amar. Since Rabbi Ishmael taught Helbe Shabbat Kerebim Biyom Kippurim, since he says that no, Shabbat is actually on a higher level than Kippur, because you can bring
the korbanot of Shabbat on Kippur, while the opposite is forbidden. Litaka, according to him, you should blow the shofar on Friday Kippur. So the people will know for the next year, the Helbe Shabbat Kerebin B'yom Kippurim, which means that they have to know that Shabbat is more stringent in the sense that the korbanot of Shabbat can be brought on Yom Kippurim, which is more lenient, which means Rabbi Zera, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, they told him that Mishnah that you quoted, or that Braita that you quoted, is only going according to Rabbi Akiva, where the day of Shabbat and Kippur are on equal footing. Therefore, you don't blow the shofar. However, according to Rabbi Ishmael, that says that Shabbat is more hamur, Shabbat is more stringent than Kippur. Why? Because on Kippur, you cannot bring the korbanot of Kippur to Shabbat. Jeez, the korbanot that you didn't finish bringing on Kippur, you cannot bring them on Shabbat. But the korbanot of Shabbat, you can bring on Kippur. So therefore, the Shabbat is more stringent. Therefore, they should blow the shofar according to the Bishmael, so they'll know that Kippur is more lenient and Shabbat is more stringent, and therefore they'll know the next year that if Kippur falls out on a Sunday, they would be allowed to bring the korbanot of Shabbat on Kippur, because again the law of Shabbat is more strict than the law of Kippur. So he wanted to say this to Rabbi Yehuda Bered, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, that the author of that Mishnah is specifically Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Zera says, "V'amina le." So I told them, and as I told him, "Kohanim zirizim him." No, according to Rabbi Ishmael, you would not have to blow the shofar on Friday to tell the Kohanim this lesson, that they can bring the korbanot of Shabbat on Kippur, to teach them that Shabbat is more strict, because Kohanim generally are zariz, meaning they're alert. They know the law. You don't have to make special laws to alert the Kohanim. Kohanim by nature are zariz, they are alert, and therefore they know the laws. Therefore, comes out we have a machloket between Rabbi Zera and Yehuda Bered Bishmom and Pazi. According to Rabbi Zera, the author of that Mishnah is specifically Rabbi Akiva, that says you would not blow the... I'm sorry, is the Devrakol. He would say the Devrakol, according to Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva, you don't blow the shofar on Friday. According to Rabbi Akiva, you don't blow the shofar on Friday because on Friday of Kippur, because Shabbat and Kippur are basically equal. You don't blow the shofar going to equal days to equal days. And according to Rabbi Ishmael, you're not going to blow the shofar on Friday. Why? Because what are you telling the Kohanim, that this day is more lenient than Shabbat? Kohanim azirizim, you don't need to give them a warning. Whereas according to Yehuda ben Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, he says no. The author of that statement is specifically Rabbi Akiva, that the days are equal, but according to Ishmael, you would blow the shofar on Friday. So comes the Gemara and says, "Amar emor koshisha bered Rav Chazdan Rav Asher, miyamrin on Kohanim zirizim him." Do we indeed say that the Kohanim are zariz, meaning that they are that they know and they're careful and they do not need to be told the halacha because they're zariz, they're meticulous in the laws? Do we say this concept that the Kohen is zariz? So it comes again and says, which means that they're fluent and that you don't have to give them a siman. That and now we learned shalosh levtil tara memelacha, shalosh levtil ben kodesh lechol. In the Beit HaMikdash, certain days they used to blow the shofar, and the Gemara tells us that some days they even would blow the shofar 21 times, and the Gemara tells us what the purpose of these sounds were. So the Gemara says three of them were to stop the people from work, and three of the sounds of the shofar were in order to signal to the people that it is now Kodesh and not Hol, meaning that the Shabbat is coming. Now, these shofarot, these sounds were blown in the Beit HaMikdash. So the assumption is that you were blowing on Friday, let's say in the Beit HaMikdash, in order to warn the Kohanim when Shabbat is coming. Now if you're telling me that the Kohanim are zirizim, that they're fluent and they know the halakha, why would we have to blow the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash to signal to the Kohanim? I thought the Kohanim are zirizim. So Gemara says, Kedemar Abaye. Like Abaye said, Lishar Amad Yerushalayim. Just like Abaye said in a different place, that the things that took place in the Beit HaMikdash were not for the Kohanim, but they were for everybody else in Jerusalem. Here too, the Shar Amma de Yerushalayim. It's referring to the other people. The reason why they blew the shofar is for the other people in Yerushalayim, not the Kohanim. Now let me explain to you what Abaye was talking about. There was a queen called Hilni Hamalka, and she made a Nevreshet. Nevreshet is a golden candelabrum, and she placed it at the gates of the Beit HaMikdash. Why did she do that? Because when the sun would hit that golden candelabrum, it would shine, and then it says everybody would know when the Zman of Kiryat Shema is. So the Gemara asked, what do you mean everybody would know? The assumption is that the Kohanim would know when Kiryat Shema is, and they would read Shema when they saw the sun shining on this Nevreshet. However, we know that the Kohanim used to read Kiryat Shema actually before its time. To the extent the Gemara says, if regular people would read Kiryat Shema when the Kohanim read the Shema of the morning, they're not Yotzeh. Because Kohanim would read it extra early. Why? Because they needed time to bring the Korban Tamid Shel Shahar. And therefore, if they would read the Kiryat Shema after sunrise, they wouldn't have time. So Abaye came along and said, you're right. When we said that that candelabrum was to signal the Zman of Kiryat Shema, it wasn't for the Kohanim. The Kohanim would say the Kiryat Shema early. That Nevresh, which was in the temple, was really to signal for everybody else outside the temple when to say the Kiryat Shema. So therefore, just like the Nevresh, which was in the temple, was not the signal to the Kohanim, it was the signal to everybody else, the non-Kohanim, so too, when it comes to the law of the shofarot that they used to blow in the Beit HaMikdash, so it was the signal, not the Kohanim on Shabbat, his Kohanim are Zirizim. It was the signal, like Abaye said, Sha'ar Amad Yerushalayim, the other people of Yerushalayim. So therefore, Kohanim indeed are Zariz, and the sounds of the shofar were not specifically for them. So that's the conclusion of this piece, that according to the Bizerah, there is no need to blow the shofar on Friday, Kippur, to Shabbat. Not according to the Akiva that says the days are equal, and not according to the Ishmael, even though Kippur is less than Shabbat, but since the Kohanim are Zariz and they're fluent in the law, you don't have to blow the shofar to tell them the halakha. So the Gemara says, wait, Velitaka, still we should blow the shofar on Friday, Kippur. So the people will know that it's permissible to trim vegetables on Kippur Day from Mincha and onward. Now let's review this halakha of Kinivat Yarak. Kinivat Yarak normally means to prepare vegetables by trimming the leaves off the stalk. You trim it and you prepare it for cooking. That is forbidden on Shabbat. Why? Because if one would trim vegetables on Shabbat, obviously he's doing it for Motzei Shabbat, because you can't cook on Shabbat. And that would be asur on Shabbat because you are preparing from Shabbat to Motzei Shabbat. However, Hachamim allowed Kinivat Yarak on Kippur from Mincha time and on. Why did they allow this on Kippur? Because even though technically you are preparing for Kippur to after Kippur, but since when one prepares food on Yom Kippur, being that he's fasting, so this causes him a lot of anguish, that he has to deal with food and he can't eat it. So therefore, since this act of Kinivat Yarak, preparing the vegetable, adds to the anguish of Kippur, Achamim said it would be permissible. So therefore we have a leniency of Kippur over Shabbat. Meaning Kippur it's permissible to do Kinivat Yarak, whereas on Shabbat it is forbidden. So therefore, according to everybody, we should blow the shofar on Kippur of Friday. Why? So the people will know that you're going from a lighter Kiddushah to a higher Kiddushah. So then the following year they'll know, when Kippur comes out on a regular day, they'll know that Kinivat Yarak is permissible. Now it should be pointed out that when Kippur does come out on a Friday, it would be forbidden kinivat yarak on the Friday of Kippur. Why? Because since anyway you can't cook on Friday night, so therefore there's no purpose to prepare the vegetables, because cooking is forbidden on Friday night. However, if you blow the shofar on the Friday of Kippur, in the subsequent years you'll know that Friday, that Kippur is more lenient, that what kinivat yarak is permissible. So they've even called to everybody, you should blow the shofar on Friday Kippur, so they'll know this halakha. Amar Rav Yosef, lefi she'en dochin shvut lehatir. Rav Yosef says, blowing the shofar really on Yom Kippur would be considered an isur d'rabbanan. We're not going to waive an isur d'rabbanan to blow shofar in order to tell the people a leniency. Which means, when will we blow the shofar? Only if the shofar will teach us a stringency. For example, let's say Friday was a regular Yom Tov, where it's permissible to cook and things like that. So now you're going from, let's say, Friday Yom Tov to Shabbat, so therefore we blow the shofar, because now you're signaling to the people you're going from a lenient day, which is permissible to cook, to a forbidden day, Shabbat, where it's asur to cook. Then we'll let them blow the shofar on Yom Tov. But to allow them to blow shofar on Kippur, which is really normally a rabbinical transgression, the rabbis did not waive the rabbinical law to tell them a leniency. Meaning, because according to this, you're teaching that it's permissible to cut vegetables on the subsequent Kippur. We're not going to waive a rabbinical isur of blowing a shofar to teach them a leniency. That's what Rabbi Yosef says. En dohin shivut lehatir. V'Rav Shisha b'Rei d'Rav Idi amar. Rav Shisha b'Rav Idi gives a different answer. Shivut kerovah hitiru. They would waive the rabbinical isur of blowing a shofar if they would learn a leniency that would apply immediately. Karov, in the near future. Shivut lechoka lo etiru. But if the leniency is going to be far out, so they will not allow you to blow the shofar this year for next year. In this case over here, as we said, the fact that they're going to blow the shofar on Friday, Kippur, is to teach you that next year on Kippur, kinivat yarak is permissible. Because this year anyway, Kippur is on a Friday, you can't do kinivat yarak because it's going right into Shabbat. So the reason why you blow the shofar is to teach them a leniency far out. He says, such a shvut, they were not lenient. If the shvut would be immediate, which means if the heter would be this year, then we'd allow them to even blow the shofar. But since the heter only comes a year later, so therefore, he does not allow you to blow the shofar. So then we have two reasons why you don't blow the shofar. Either because we don't blow the shofar, I mean the rabbis did not waive their restriction of blowing the shofar to tell you leniency, in this case kinivat yarak, or no, they would blow the shofar to tell you a leniency, but so long as the leniency would be immediate. But since this leniency doesn't have application till the following year, so therefore we do not blow the shofar. Are you telling me that shisha, that if the shvut, if the if the heter would be immediate, the rabbis would allow you to blow the shofar? That, and now we learned in the Mishnah, Yom Tov Shehaliyot Erev Shabbat. If let's say Yom Tov falls out on a Friday, Tokin, we blow the shofar, Velo Mavdinin. But we do not make Havdalah. We only make Havdalah when we go from a Kodesh day to a Hol day. Here you're actually going from Kodesh to Kodesh, so you just have to make Kiddush, no Havdalah. Motzei Shabbat, if Yom Tov comes out on a Sunday, Mavdilin, so then you would make Havdalah, because you're going from Shabbat, a holy day, to a less holy day. Velo Tokin, and you do not blow the shofar when you're on Shabbat, that is followed by a Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, "Amai, why shouldn't you blow the shofar? Litaka, you should blow the shofar. Ki hechi delidai, so the people will know the shari b'shechita le'altar. So the people will know that it's permissible to do shechita immediately. Meaning, even though we know, we gave a rule before, that you only blow the shofar when you go from a lenient day to a strict day. But the Gemara is saying, even though you're going from Shabbat to Yom Tov, which is really a strict day to a lenient day, when we normally do not blow the shofar, however, in this case, you should blow it, not on Shabbat, but on Motzei Shabbat. Blow the shofar immediately in order to signal to the people that now Shechita is permissible. Meaning, that which was forbidden on Shabbat Shechita, once Yom Tov comes in, Shechita is permissible. So we should blow the shofar on Motzei Shabbat to signal to the people that what? that shechita now is permissible, then go start slaughtering your animals. And the Hakamim say, you don't do that. So what do you see? Even though there's an immediate leniency over here that shechita is permissible, that still the rabbis did not waive their law of blowing shofar on Yom Tov. And therefore you see Rav Shisha was wrong. Rav Shisha wanted to say that if it was an immediate heter, the rabbis would waive their law of blowing the shofar. And here we see that even on Yom Tov, Motzei Shabbat, they do not allow you to blow the shofar to tell you that permissible to make shechita immediately. So therefore the Gemara says, Elam havarta kedei Rav Yosef. We have to go back to the original answer of Rav Yosef, that the rabbis did not allow us to blow the shofar just to teach you a leniency, even an immediate or future leniency. And therefore, we do not blow the shofar on Friday Kippur, even though it's more lenient in the sense that you can trim vegetables, kinivat yarak, still they do not waive the isur of blowing shofar to teach you a heter. Amar of Zera, Amar of Huna, Amar Ila, Amar of Abba, Amar of Huna. Yom Kippurim Shechaliyot B'Shabbat Asur B'Knibat Yarak. So now we said, on a regular Shabbat, it's forbidden to trim the vegetables. On Kippur, it's permissible. But now let's say Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbat itself. So the Gemara says, in the name of Rav Huna, it is forbidden to do Knibat Yarak. Amar Rav Mana, Tana, Na Tanya Nami Achim, we have a bride to support this, that Knivat Yarak would be Asur on Shabbat Kippur. Minayin Yom Kippurim Shachal Yom B'Shabbat Shasur B'Knivat Yarak, how do you know it is forbidden? Talmud Lomar Shabbaton. Because the Pasuk says Shabbaton, which means regarding Shabbat, we have an extra Pasuk Shabbaton. That what you have to refrain from work. Then the Shabbaton Pasuk by Shabbat teaches you Shavut, meaning stop work. Lemai. What do you mean? What do you need this pasuk for? If it's telling me that you cannot do regular melacha on Shabbat, meaning, for example, you would not be allowed to pick vegetables from the field, which is a regular full-fledged melacha, picking vegetables from the field, what do I need the pasuk to tell me Shabbaton for? V'akitiv lo ta'aseh kol melacha. Already we know that. You can't do melacha on Shabbat. E'lalav akenivat yarak. Must be talking about where you're not doing a full-fledged melacha, like picking something from the ground. Ela must be talking, even if it was picked already, and you're just trimming it and preparing it, it'll be forbidden. Shma mina. So therefore, from the word Shabbaton, we learn that on Shabbat comes out on Yom Kippur, or Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbat, it'll be forbidden to do kinivat yarak. Again, from the fact that it says Shabbaton, obviously the pasuk was not coming to tell me that I can't pick vegetables on Shabbat. That's what I'll say, kol melaka. Ela, the extra pasuk must be teaching me that even something that's a non-melaka, like trimming vegetables, is also going to be asur on Shabbat, whether it's a regular Shabbat or even Shabbat Kippur. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Yom Kippurim Shechal Yot B'Shabbat Mutar B'Knivat Yarak. But Rav Yochanan argues, he says no, if Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbat, it's permissible to do Knivat Yarak. So they asked him a question from the Braita. Minayin Yom Kippurim Shechal Yot B'Shabbat She'asur B'Knivat Yarak. The Braita asked, how do you know that it should be forbidden on Shabbat Kippur, Knivat Yarak? Tamud Lomar Shabbaton, from the fact that it says by Shabbat, Shabbaton, which teaches us Shavuot, stop working, they might. What type of work? If it's referring to actual melacha, for example, picking vegetables from the ground, that must be coming to tell me that no, full-fledged melacha, we know, is a suit of lotan sekol melacha. What is Shabbaton coming to teach me? To teach me that what, even trimming vegetables would be forbidden on Shabbat Kippur. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, lemlacha. Really, I'll tell you, when it says Shabbaton, it's teaching you also, you have to refrain from full-fledged melacha. And the chidush of the pasuk is to tell me that not only when one does a melacha on Shabbat does he transgress a negative commandment, lo ta'aseh kol melacha, but he also transgresses a positive commandment of Shabbaton, meaning stop working. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan, really in every chidush Shabbat there's a lo ta'aseh and an aseh. But that's only on full-fledged melachot, meaning, for example, picking vegetables from the ground. But trimming vegetables would be permissible on Shabbat that falls out Kippur on that day. So comes the Gemara and says, Tanya, Kivat, Rabbi Yochanan. We have a b'raita actually to support Rabbi Yohanan. And the Braita says, Yom Kippurim shachal yot v'shabbat. If Yom Kippurim falls out on Shabbat, mutar b'knivat yarak, can be permissible to prepare the vegetables. Now again, since it's only asur midrabbanan, the rabbis waived the isur midrabbanan of preparing on Kippur for Motzei Kippur, because since it gives them extra pain to prepare food and they can eat it, so therefore this is considered an inui, that's part of the affliction of the day, so therefore they permitted it. So the Gemara continues, and we skip the parentheses, for that matter, mefatze'in be'egozim, we're able to crack open nuts, ומפרקסים ברימונים, and you can also peel open the pomegranates, meaning you can prepare the nuts and the fruit as well. However, מן המנחה ומעלה, only from מנחה time and up, the Hakamim explained this, referring to מנחה קטנה, the later מנחה, מפני אגמת נפש, because of the אגמת נפש, the distress that is going to cause them, specifically from מנחה time and on, where one is suffering from hunger pains and he can't wait to eat, so specifically at that point where preparing food would be an extra tzad, so therefore it would be permissible. So again, that's the way Rashi learns, that they only made it permissible on Shabbat Kippur to prepare the vegetables only from Minha and on, and the Agmat Nefesh we're talking over here is because as he's preparing it at that time where it's late in the day, where he's very hungry, so it'll cause him pain, and therefore Hakamim allowed it because of the Inui factor. It should be pointed out, other Rishonim learned a little differently than the Rashi. They say that the Agmat Nefesh is that after the fast, if the food is not going to be ready immediately, there's going to be extra tzad, anguish, that the person cannot break his fast immediately, that he's going to have to wait a longer time. So the rabbis allowed to prepare on Kippur in order to take away that pain of delaying the breaking of the fast. However, they only allowed it from mincha time and on. Why? Because since already he fasted the large majority of the day, the assumption is he's not going to eat what he's preparing. Because since he came so far in the fast, so therefore he's not going to break it from mincha time and on. But if you let him do it from earlier than mincha time, then already he might come to break his fast. So we have two different understandings of what the Agmat Nefesh is. Now she learns the Agmat Nefesh is that the preparing of the food is permissible because that itself is a distress, that he has to prepare food and cannot eat it. So that's part of the spirit of the day of Inuim. However, according to other Rishonim, the Agmat Nefesh is that if he doesn't prepare the food on Kippur, he's going to have suffering after Kippur, that he cannot break his fast immediately. We don't want him to have that Agmat Nefesh. And therefore he can prepare, but specifically from Mincha time and on. According to Rashi, Mincha time and on, the explanation is because from that time the hunger pains are strong, and therefore preparing food is an extra tzad, which is good for the day. However, according to other Rishonim, no, from Kippur time and on, since he fasted the majority of the day, we don't assume that he'll break his fast on the food that he's preparing, but only from a hot time and on. Comes Gemara and says, the bed of Yehuda, Rav Yehuda, in the house of Yehuda, mekanbe karba, they would prepare the cabbage, they would trim the cabbage, and the explanation is, they would do this on even Shabbat of Kippur. The bed Rabba, in the house of Rabba, gerde kare, they would, let's say, peel the squash or the pumpkins. However, kevan the haza, since Rabba saw the havu kameharfe, they were actually doing it before mincha time. So Amar Lehu, so he said, ata igirta mimarava, a letter came from the west, meaning from Israel, mishemet Rabbi Yohanan, the name of Yohanan, that said the asir, that it is forbidden, which means he came along and said that the Yohanan holds that kenivat yarak is forbidden on Shabbat Kippur, or regular Kippur for that matter, even after Mincha, because we're concerned that they might do it before Mincha. Now, Rabbi Yohanan really never made that statement. On the contrary, Rabbi Yohanan was the one that said it's permissible to do it on Kippur after Mincha. But Rabba wanted to impress upon his household that it's forbidden, because he saw them doing it from before Mincha. So he knew if he's going to say it in his own name, they might not listen. So he said, Rabotai, Rabbi Yohanan retracted. Rabbi Yohanan really holds that it is forbidden on Kippur, because at all, even after Minchat time. So therefore he knew that his family would accept it when they would hear it from the source, Rabbi Yochanan. So if we, and you want to say fabricated, but he did it l'shem shamayim in order to impress upon his family. So he said that there was a letter that came from the west that told us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that indeed it is asur. So again, let's just review this last piece. So here comes out, we have a mahloket. If kinivat yarak is permissible on Shabbat Kippur, according to Rav Huna, it is forbidden, just like it's forbidden on every Shabbat. And he learns that from the pasuk Shabbaton, to teach you that even kinivat yarak is forbidden, whereas Rabbi Yochanan says it's permissible. And the pasuk Shabbaton teaches you that there's just an additional mitzvah aseh on the regular melachot, like plucking from the ground. But kinivat yarak would be permissible on Shabbat Kippur only from menhat time and on. And then Rabbi came along and said, even after menhat time, it'll be forbidden, because he saw that people would start doing it from before menhat time as well. Hadran alach ve'elu kesharim. Hadran alach ve'elu kesharim.